an affirmative defense might exist if a company gets sued on certain types of claims, particularly harassment complaints based on race, sex, religion, national origin, disability, or age, if the employer knew or should have known about the violation and it investigated the issue and took prompt action reasonably calculated to correct the problem. So, in other words, even if it happened, if once we found out that it happened, or we should have found out that it happened, we had reason to know it was happening, if we investigate and we nip it in the bud, we do what's right, and we take reasonable action, then potentially we're not liable as an employer, even if it happened. Okay, so that's a pretty powerful defense. Now, there's a couple of different kinds of harassment, quid pro quo harassment, where you have a situation where a power is being abused and an adverse action is taken based on an employee's response to a sexual overture. There's no defense to that. If it happened, doesn't matter you have a policy, doesn't matter if you train on your policy, doesn't matter if you investigated and took prompt action. If it happened, you're liable. It's strict liability. No defense available. But if it's hostile environment type harassment, this defense is available if you can prove it. So this is just part of the defense. It's not the entire defense. But the other part of the defense is that the employee unreasonably failed to take advantage of the reporting process that you have, which when we talked about the harassment policy and not giving employees the out not to report it, that covers that. But in the investigation stage, that's not as relevant. Yes. Adverse action taken. If it's quid pro quo and no adverse action is taken, my understanding is that it falls under hostile environment, and so you'd still have potentially this argument. Okay. Okay. So who should investigate when you have these situations? Because investigating and taking prompt and appropriate remedial action, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to have worked, but it has to. You had to have reason to believe it would have worked, right? So you don't have to always fire. Because then you know it worked. Because if you have reason to believe that a written document, write-up or even an oral warning is going to be enough, if that's reasonable, then you shouldn't be liable. Now, hindsight's 20/20, and the jury may second-guess you on that. But technically speaking, you only have to do what you reasonably believe is going to be sufficient to solve the problem. So who should conduct the investigation? It can be a supervisor. It could be human resources. It could be your in-house counsel. I wouldn't necessarily use your in-house counsel if it's something that you anticipate using as a defense, because then you got a privilege complication issue there where do you draw the line of what's still privileged and what they have to testify to about the investigation they conducted. But if you know you're not going to use that defense, you don't have that defense available, or you know you've already blown it ain't going to happen because you didn't take prompt and appropriate remedial action, then that's a possibility. Or an outside investigator. And an outside investigator is usually not brought in unless it's somebody at a very high level, like CEO, CFO, key executive, the head of HR, somebody who is in a position where it would be difficult to find somebody within the company who could truly conduct a neutral investigation, because the person being investigated is so powerful within the company, you're vulnerable to the argument that that wasn't really a neutral investigation. Of course, you found for the company. Why wouldn't you? That person decides your future career. Then you have to decide whether or not you want a non-attorney or an attorney. Now, if you have an attorney, there's still the possibility that you could make an argument that what they discover when they're conducting their investigation is privileged. But you can't ultimately, at trial, use both the privilege and the investigation at the same time. You can't use it as a sword and a shield. So you're either going to have to, put the attorney up and waive that privilege, or you're going to have to not put the attorney up. But if you don't know what you're going to do, then, if you want the possible argument that that is privileged, then you may want to consider using an attorney for that purpose. So those are just my thoughts on that. Identify the investigator's role. Obviously, the investigator is to be neutral. Their purpose is to gather information, and then you need to know who are they going to present this information to, and is it going to be presented just orally, or is it going to be presented in writing? Determine whether or not you want signed witness statements. I don't like them because it slows the process by 1,000-fold, because people will yak, 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 but then when you ask them to sign something, they start and anything that had any juice to it at all, they're not going to sign it, right? They're going to start taking out all the good stuff that they don't want backfiring on them because they're terrified of retaliation. And so, you know, it just, it really slows down. I only did it once, and that was when I knew that the plant where I was conducting the investigation was shutting down in like 3 weeks. And all those witnesses were going to be gone and unhappy with the company and probably not necessarily even findable. So we did written statements because written statements, you know, signed sworn statements can be admissible in summary judgment. So that was very unusual. But think about whether or not you want a written statement or not, whether or not you want it sworn. Because if you put a written statement and it's signed, it's definitely going to be discoverable. To draw conclusions, do you want the investigator drawing conclusions and or making recommendations? My general view is don't start out asking your investigator, if you're using a third party, don't start out asking them for that. Because especially if you're the lawyer, you just need information. Based on the information, then you can probably advise your client what you see as the next steps. But if the person that you've engaged or the company's engaged to conduct that investigation says that, you know, that this person definitely is guilty and needs to be fired, and it turns out that that also happens to be the son of the CEO, and that person is not going to be fired, now you've got a written, quote, expert neutral party saying that that's what the company needs to do, but the company didn't do it, and that's not going to be helpful at trial. So my view is don't ask for findings and recommendations unless after you get the investigation back, you feel like that provides some value to you and or your client.